thank you guys. I mean, like, it's amazing to have you here. And as I was mentioning, I'm a big fan of your work with Watch the Footage. It's I love horror movies, and as I was saying a few minutes before, and I mean, like, I also really like your paintings, your art, Alison. It's great.
Thank you. I
got two of them. I still have to frame them because I still have to move to my new place, and here I'm only renting, but I have them here. So, you know.
I know, you got your own little collection.
Yeah, I like them, so I really love them. So, I mean, it's that kind of style that it's a bit like dark and cartoonish at the same time that I really like. So, I mean,
Thank you. My art is such a fun little thing to see how people react to it. I found it interesting to see who reacts to it being like, ooh, this is so cute. And then the other half of people are like, this is so creepy. Like, it just kind of rides that line of like seeing how people react to it. It's just always really fun.
Yeah. There is another one that I think I'm going to get into there eventually. Like the unknown, the gray alien, that's so scary. I mean, like, I think I kind of want that, but at the same time, I think if I wake up and I see that on my wall, I'm going to freak out, you know, like.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of conspiracy theories about aliens. So, I mean, I don't know if I believe it, but I do love them, you know. Like.
I know. Dylan and I have talked about doing music projects together and just sampling different clips of, you know, people talking about reptilians and just make it a whole big conspiracy theory thing of just taking sound bites of
taking moments of like the Betty and Barney Hill abduction tapes as well, like just using that, sampling that in random places. It's really bad audio quality, but that's why it can be creepy.
But yeah, today this is episode 11 of The Corner, L'Angolo di Gabe, so that's a new it's going to be after episode 10. I was saying that I was going to have a new style, a new logo, and a new music. Hopefully that will be once I publish this. And today I have two special guests, very special guests for my new format, Dylan and Ashley, and Alison Snyder. See, like, I'm very excited to have you. So I'm actually inverting the name. So yeah, Alison and Dylan Snyder. Welcome, guys. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, of course.
So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, like acting and directing career, art, you know, like this is a podcast about hobbies, passions, and lifestyle. So, I mean, like, I guess you guys have a lot of passions and a lot of hobbies. So we can talk about that a little bit, you know, like, and we'll go from there, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
Sorry, I'm really, really excited. This is, I want to brag a little bit this because I have a, listeners from both Canada, States, and someone from Italy as my original country. And my best friend and his fiance and his brother are huge Disney fans. So I need to brag with them. Like, they know you guys for Disney better than I know you guys for Disney. I'm a lot older than you. So when you guys were filming Disney, I was already an adult. I mean, like, fully adult. So I wasn't really.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. I remember when we were on the Disney Channel and, you know, people would come up in public and ask for photos, you know, when children come up, or like clearly the parents of the children come up. But then when you get like 30-year-olds coming up and being like, hey, you're so wonderful on the show, you're like, why are you watching? Where's your child?
We're 13, 14-year-olds, and you have
like older people coming up and you're like, what are you doing watching the Disney Channel?
I know. I actually, it's possible that I watch more Disney Channel now than when I was in my teenager year, because I was such a rebellious kid, and I thought Disney was kind of lame. I don't think that anymore, but I had this kind of love-hate relationship with Disney, so
Disney has been really, really awesome. A lot of my friends have actually gone back to start watching Disney.
I think the nostalgia
again
is getting exciting for people, and like the Disney Channel original movies. But yeah, no, it's definitely interesting in an age where kids watch things like South Park now. Yeah. It's sort of like Disney really, really dumbs things down. And so it's like for the little selective audience of parents who are really overprotective.
I understand. Like, you want Disney as the kind of politically correct channel for your kids. compared to what the, you know, Family Guy or The Simpsons or South Park are, you know. Like,
absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah, we had a lot of really specific restrictions of what we were allowed to do on the show. And so they were constantly having network people come in and, like, correct things in the script and just watch us filming and making sure that, like, even everything down to, like, the wardrobe of making sure that everybody was dressed really appropriately and nothing could be seen as, like, exploiting kids.
So on top of that, I remember we always had restrictions on certain things. Like, you're not allowed to give thumbs up because that can be
something different in other countries.
Exactly. So there was one time where they we had the department that tells us that we can't do something. They're called S&P, Standards and Practices. Yeah. And they came in and they said, all right, so we can't give high fives anymore. And it's so awkward because there's no...
It's a karate show, so it's like they finish a tournament or a fight and they, like, high five.
Not only that, but it's like whenever you say hello to somebody on Disney, it's like you don't give handshakes and, like, fist bumps are a little weird, especially for, like, the, I guess, the vibe that we had going on the show. So it was always like, oh, what's up, man? And now it was like, oh... Hi.
Handshake.
Just a regular handshake, right? I mean, like,
really, it was really weird. Yeah, it was like season three and started not high-fiving anymore.
I mean, like, that coming, I think, and I, again, I'm not going to talk about politics because that's such a tough topic, you know, like, but I think Disney coming from a controversial history, like, you know, Walt Disney, all the controversy about, like, you know, anti-Semitism. I don't know if it's true or not. Like, I didn't dig that much. It might be only conspiracy, but I think the new Disney wants to show that it's for everybody, you know, like inclusion, you know, like integration, which is great anyway. Like, you know, in a world like today's where hate is coming back strong, unfortunately, I think Disney is doing quite a good job, you know, like, although sometimes it might sound a bit too politically correct and like, this is definitely staged. It's not definitely something everybody there think about things like that, you know, like.
It can definitely be annoying when it's something as simple as a thumbs up, but I do appreciate them as a whole, making sure that they're really, you know, catering to everybody and making sure that it's okay.
Yeah, no, I found it interesting recently because I was teaching an acting class and I was reading some of the scripts that we had. And one of them was from Raven's Home, which is the, I guess, the reboot of That's So Raven. And one of the characters, sorry, coffee's ready. One of the characters or I guess it was Chelsea from the previous series, her husband is in prison or was in prison. And that's like a really big topic of the show. And it's kind of, I guess it's catering, but it's kind of including kids who may not have a parent because they're in the prison system.
I know I Didn't Do It As Well was the first show that incorporated she had two dads.
Yes,
right?
That's correct. Yeah,
Sarah's character had two dads.
Yeah,
she had asked the writers about incorporating that in, and so they were excited to
they've definitely been taking a lot of steps to try and make sure that everybody is represented over the past several years.
Yeah. That makes me feel that makes me feel good because it's an important thing, you know, inclusion, you know, like as I was mentioning. So, and again, like my love and hate for Disney when I was a teenager was because, you know, like you, when you're a teenager and in the 90s or early 2000s, like you try to be political, even if you don't know much about that. And I have to attribute that to my very political family, which I love, but you know, like it's a very political family mind. So I tried, but they actually like Disney, you know, no matter what, and they made me watch a lot of Disney. But when I was a teenager, I dig a lot of Disney controversies or controversial facts about Disney, and I said, oh, I don't like this, I'm not gonna watch it. But now, if I think now about that, I was just being stupid and rebellious, you know, like. But I actually appreciate a lot more Disney now, also because I'm a big Marvel fan, so as you see from my head as well.
Yeah.
So I'm a big Marvel fan, and I love watching Disney Plus because of Marvel or Star Wars, which is another one of my passions. Star Wars and Marvels are I'm big in that, so you know.
Sure.
I know the amount of things that Disney owns and produces. It's like you gotta find something Disney that you love. I mean, like even certain sports and like Pirates of the Caribbean. It's like they've got something for everybody.
Yeah, I mean ESPN is a Disney company.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, now Fox is a Disney company. I mean, like, it's a crazy how much stuff they own. I mean, like, it's crazy. And I'm a little bit of
to appear on the moon.
Yeah, I'm a little bit afraid of monopoly of them. But I know, like, it's the industry now, I guess. You know, like, there is a big battle between Netflix, Disney, and HBO. You know, like, it's all a battle for who owns the most. You know, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, but yeah, I mean, like, we're going to go probably back to Disney towards the end. I would like to talk, if you guys want, about Watch the Footage and your productions. You know, that's amazing. You guys are so young and you guys already have acting and directing experience. So you have your own production company. It's, you guys are only 22 or 21. I mean, like,
23.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's amazing. It's successful. Your productions are really good. And, somehow alternative compared to the mainstream horror movie. So I really enjoy that, to be honest.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, both Dylan and I have grown up in the entertainment industry. Myself, I've been acting since 4 years old, so that's 2 decades. And, you know, we've always been so fascinated with everything that goes on behind the camera. And it can be a little bit frustrating as an actor. You know, you go out there and you do your couple lines and it's like, it's scripted by somebody else. And like, you're dressed by somebody else. Somebody else does your hair and makeup. And then you show up, you do your line the best of your ability. And they're like, okay, now go sit over there for 4 hours while we set up the next shot. And you're like, you only get to be such a tiny, tiny part of the creative process and only put in your tiny little bit of contribution. Whereas if you're the one behind the camera, it's like you get to take a project from start to finish and make sure you're like shaping it, and just watching that whole process is just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was on Kickin' It, and I was young. I was 12 when we shot the pilot, 13 when we started filming the show. And we finished the show when I was about 17. And during that time, I was, you know, I was kind of like, I guess, growing into myself and realizing the kind of scope of the industry and how big filmmaking was. And something that fascinated me was it takes a couple hundred people to make a series, and probably a couple thousand if you go really dive into every single department.
Yeah.
But even just on set, that's so many people, so many jobs, and I didn't know what they did. And so I wanted to learn what exactly they did. So while I was on the show, I spent time shadowing pretty much every department, kind of just seeing a little glimpse into what exactly are you doing right now? How does this make the project get done?
Yeah, and so both Dylan and I really loved, you know, talking to all sorts of different crew members and kind of seeing the whole process. And it was really fun because I graduated at age 15 and I started taking cinematography classes at 17 in like a community college. And it was nice taking community college classes because, you know, I wasn't there for, you know, getting a piece of paper that I said I completed a course. I wasn't there for grades or anything. I was just there to learn and use the equipment and speak to, you know, these professors who were really knowledgeable about film and film equipment. And so it's like getting my hands on things, especially for an affordable community college price, was invaluable. And being able to like sit there in an editing bay and, you know, edit projects right there with them by my side, it was so helpful. And it's like, I've always been a hands-on learner. And so after I took a few semesters, we teamed up with a couple family friends of ours and just started producing really small, just kind of low budget short films, just to sort of, you know, get on that set environment and take things very seriously. Both Dylan and I have had a lot of experience shooting little like home movies in the backyard, where it's like, you know, whether you're filming it on your phone or like a little flip camera. I remember I used to have one of those like flip HDs. But this time we were like, okay, let's actually get like nicer cameras and let's get some lighting set up and let's like do this in the legit way. Even if we're only like a 3 or 4 person crew, let's just kind of like take ourselves a little bit more seriously, rent a location, have auditions, hire actors. And it really just kind of put into perspective how many jobs there are and how many things you have to think about. And each short film sort of got a little bit bigger as we went along.
That's a lot of work, right? I mean, like, it's amazing. Like, you see the final product on TV, and then you realize, even for independent productions, how much work there is behind, you know, like,
yeah.
It's amazing.
I think that most people watching film or television don't realize, especially with single camera television, you know, disregarding sitcoms, with single camera television, like dramas, every single shot that you see is an entirely new setup of the camera.
It was done at a different part of the day.
Right. You know, if we have a scene together and you only see one of us in each shot, that is twice that we've had to film it. One for me at least, one for her. Yeah. I mean, setups entirely.
Yeah, like you might watch one action scene and that could have taken them like 3 weeks to film.
Right. So it's, you know, our 13-minute short film, Room 566, it took us 4 days to film. Which we made a great time on those 4 days, but still, it's 4 days of filming, not to mention the time editing. It's
for something that goes by in under 20 minutes.
It's insane, and I love it. I love that. Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, look, I really appreciate watch the footage, and I was saying, because it's simple, but it's direct, and as I said, like, it's also... I don't know if that's the right word for Room 566, but it's also... As I said, I mentioned before, introspective, but very philosophic, you know, like the hospital, the guy, you know, like the fear for his little sister, you know, like this kind of legend that you don't, I mean, like it's really great. It's really, I would say like, it's really tough to watch, it's really great to watch, but it really makes you feel, you know, like you're feeling it, you know, like you want this, how's it going to end? Like, what's happening here? Like it brings anxiety, you know, which is what you want from an horror movie, from an horror movie, you know.
Like, thank you. That makes us feel good. Thank you. That's really nice to hear. We, making this project, you know, Dylan directed it. I wrote the project, and I have this irrational phobia of hospitals. They call it, some of the doctors that I've met with have called it white coat syndrome. I just, you too.
Yay. Oh, well, yes. Yes. Big time. Yeah.
It's difficult because, like, I'll be, you know, getting a checkup. It could be something really simple. I might, you know, have a cold and I need to go in and get antibiotics. It could be anything small. Mm. But, like, even just something as simple as getting my blood pressure taken has made me pass out before. And it's like, I can't explain it. And it's like, I can sit there and be like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm totally fine. Like, I understand. I'm not going to hurt or, like get hurt. And they'll even tell me. They're like, oh, don't worry. It doesn't hurt. And I'm like, you don't understand. It's not the fear of pain. It's like, even when it's like painful, it's like, it's almost, that's something for me to focus on. It's not about the pain. It's just the whole environment, and something about it just makes me really uncomfortable. And so Room 566 was supposed to capture that essence of like something you can't quite put your finger on or something you don't understand. It just feels like, you know, the nurses aren't telling you everything and there's just more going on behind and you're trying to get to the bottom of it. And I just wanted to make sure that anxiety built.
I completely feel you. I have white coat syndrome. Every time I go to an ambulatory or an hospital, even to take only my blood pressure the first time comes up so much higher. And, you know, people, doctor worry because you see a big guy, you know, like let's say a fat guy, and they say, oh my God, this guy has a high blood pressure, which I actually don't have. But like the first measurement is always like super high. And and I have hypochondria, so I mean I'm really afraid of diseases. So I mean, like, that movie was like, that's really good. That's really good for me. That really increases anxiety. And I like, because you watch horror movies, you know, for adrenaline, for anxiety. Wait, you know, like for the moment when, you know, like the anxiety explodes, that you get the kind of feeling you want from an horror movie. So
yeah, thank you.
And I also like we the one I call Ouija. Like, it's very short. It's like 5 minutes. I think it's so funny. I'm a little bit of a grammar Nazi, so I mean, like, so I understand how the demon feels when it gets corrected every time. I mean, I understand the people correcting the most, because I tend sometimes to correct people, and I shouldn't, but above all because English is not my first language, so I mean, like, I shouldn't, but yeah, then I understand also the frustration of the demon. So that one is so funny, and it's only 5 minutes. It makes you laugh.
Filming Ouija was really fun. The cast was so wonderful, those four main actors. I'm dear friends with Matthew Scott Montgomery, one of the actors in it. Him and I were actually castmates on Disney So Random. And so, I definitely have my little, like, grammar pet peeves, and I'm not as much of a grammar nerd as a lot of people are. I do my best, and the big ones that get me are, like, the your and your, like, the apostrophe R-E. Little things like that. But ultimately I thought it would be really funny to create a project where there's these kind of grammar nerds that are very much focusing on the wrong thing, because there's certain times where it's like Yes, I do think that correcting grammar is important, and I think it is important to pay attention to that, but also there's more important things. So yeah. I wanted to kind of show that contrast of like, you're clearly spelling it wrong, but also there's a demon that's attacking everybody, and maybe we should
that one first. They feel more pain because of the grammar, the wrong grammar, than actually the, facing a demon. It's funny. I mean, like, and yeah, you were mentioning Matthew Scott Montgomery. I actually, I knew you guys before actually this, but like I remember I'm a big fan of Smosh, and I watched a Smoshcast with you and Matthew Scott.
Yeah,
I know these guys, but I was figuring that then you guys talk about Watch the Future and Room and you know like the horror movies. I said I know Allison and Dylan from them. I didn't realize that also Matthew Scott was in the production, and he was actually you know like in the short movie, you know, like and. So, I mean, I found out that I like Smosh, and I also, you know, like, I'm a fan of you guys. So, I mean, it's kind of cool. And
absolutely.
You work with Shane and
Damien,
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah.
Fun little fact. Matthew Scott's actually in Room 566, but you would never know because he plays our creature.
Yeah. True. Like, he's the creature. Like, you don't know it's him, but like it's him actually. It's a pretty good, pretty great actor too. You know, like Matthew Scott, really.
Yeah, it was basically just giving him a call saying, "Hey, do you want to play a demon?"
Like, he was like, "Yes." He asked no other questions. I was just like, "You down to play a demon?" He was like, "Absolutely." And I was like, "Okay." There's like full blackout contacts and like a bunch of prosthetics. He's like, "Yes, 100%, yes." I was like, "All right."
Yeah, it's a. Another thing I really like of you guys is the little show Astrid Clover on on YouTube. Like, I actually leave sometimes comments because I think it's so funny. Like, it's hilarious. Like the Karen ones, it was so funny. Like, but I like comedy maybe even more than horror, because I watch horror when I need some adrenaline. But comedy is when you actually feel like after a long day of 9 hours at the office in front of a computer, you don't want to do anything else. You watch some funny comedy, even short, because you don't want to get it too long. And I really like Astrid Clover. It's really, really cool and funny, to be honest. There are a few things that are like the extreme, or like I say, there is always, you know, like boom guy try to bring you back to reason, because you know, like you in the Astrid in the show is kind of going extreme and sometimes, you know, like
the characters, I've always said, are just kind of exaggerated versions of ourselves, because the conversations that take place behind the camera are pretty darn similar to what goes on camera, of Dylan just being like, "This is a bad idea. This is a dangerous thing." And I'm like, "It's for the show. It'll be great. It'll be fine. Everybody just make sure you're rolling the whole time."
So you're kind of grounding the situation, you know, like you're kind of want to stay with your feet on the ground, you know, like.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been times where
you shut down a lot of my ideas.
Here's the thing, Allison, for an episode a long time ago, it was like our Antichrist episode, she was like, "Okay, so I'm going to put this sheet on, and then we'll catch it on fire, and then I'll just take it off." And I'm like, "You want to take the sheet off after it's on fire?" And she's like, "Yeah, I'll just do it
quickly. I'll just take it off quickly. It's not going to like that. It's not going to go up."
It's like, "No, I'm not going to let you light yourself on fire and then try and take it off. That's stupid. We're going to..."
So fun.
We're gonna like have it halfway off of you first, then we'll light it on fire so it's not on you.
Yeah, I understand you. Like I was the kind of friend in my group of friends back home, like the one trying to, when I was playing for a band, like with my friends, and I was the grounder. Like they hated me sometimes, but like I think I took them off trouble a couple of times, you know, like plus we're playing in some pretty weird venues, I would say. Like we were in a punk rock band, and punk rock in Italy is definitely not popular. And we were playing in some really strange venues with some people that probably nowadays you would like to avoid, you know, like, so sometimes I was the oldest one as well. So probably they needed the ground, you know, like maybe they hated me sometimes, but I feel that that it's been a good idea to be there, you know. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. No, I'm thank you so much for watching Astrid. We have a lot of fun making those. It's been 6 years. Is it 6 or 7?
It has not been 7.
It's gonna be.
It's coming up on six for sure.
Yeah, because I've been doing the show longer than Dylan and I were even dating, and you know now we're married, and so it's been quite a journey. It's kind of been interesting to, you know, go back and watch old episodes because it's sort of documented me at many stages of my life because I've been doing it for so long, and we do it every single week. There's never been a week that we miss, and so you kind of get to see me grow up throughout it.
The beginning of the series was filmed on the flip, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the beginning of our series, we started filming on the flip. That was way before we were watched the footage or had any legitimate camera gear or anything.
Yeah, we never even said watch the footage until way later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was definitely has evolved.
Technically, Astrid Clover is not a Watch the Footage production. I mean, like, or it is not,
everything we put our hands on is kind of a Watch the Footage production because it's us.
We are Watch the Footage. It's just, the Astrid Clover was started before the idea of Watch the Footage was made.
Even a thing, yeah.
I joined Astrid Clover almost 5 years ago, or five or so years ago.
Yeah, because I remember we had a party for, was it the 50th episode? I had a party for the 50th episode that Dylan attended as just a guest and to come hang out. And,
yes.
And then he ended up joining the series after we started dating.
Okay, that's a pretty cool show. I don't know if it's, you said when you were talking about Disney, like, you know, why are you guys 30s and you're no kids and you're watching Disney, but it's not weird watching, you know, like Astrid Clover. I think it's for a more adult audience, to be honest. Like, you know, and you guys are very responsive because sometimes I comment because it was funny. I comment that you, as a boom guy, most of the time you have this kind of earphones, those Sony here that I use, they're amazing. I commented as well. I love this episode, but the best thing is actually that you're wearing my same headphones. So, and you guys responded. So I mean, like, you guys are really awesome and great with your fan because you guys are responsive. You know, like, you guys responded to me and you've been so amazing making sure that those your paintings would come to me. I mean, like, so you, really, really great people, to be honest, from, like, honestly. I really enjoy your stuff and you guys also seem great guys, you know. Like,
thank you. Yeah, we have, I mean, obviously we know that we wouldn't be anywhere without people who are supporting our work, and, you know, doing anything creative is, you gotta have people supporting it because it's entertainment. So if you're not entertaining anybody or you're not catering to that, making sure that you're kind of growing that grassroots fan base, it's you're not gonna get anywhere. And so, you know.
Definitely, I understand. But, you know, sometimes fans can be a little bit, I mean, like, can be tough to, how can I say, to manage, because sometimes you have the fan that it's too want to get too close, you know, like
there's only been a few people that we've really had to watch out for, make, you know, some certain life changes and double check that the doors are locked, but ultimately you know, there's plenty of people who are just absolutely wonderful and we consider friends that, you know, have discovered us through our work and are just really cool.
I mean, I really was afraid. I mean, I'm going to ask them to come to the podcast, but I'm afraid this is too much. I'm getting too into the private life. You know, I was afraid to ask you guys because, I mean, like, you know, you never know, you know, like, I don't want to bother. I mean, like, I'm not here to bother. I'm here because I have fun doing my homemade podcast and I enjoy your work, you know, like, so it's amazing. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Moving towards the end, like, my best friend, again, his fiance and his younger brother are big Disney fan, and they actually sent me a couple of questions. They are really, really huge Disney fan, like,
okay.
And they sent me a couple of questions that if you guys can answer, you know, like, how do you guys got, of course, you guys were kids actors, so I guess it wasn't directly you getting in touch with Disney, but they asked me, how do you guys got in touch with the world of Disney, like acting on Disney, if you guys were Disney fan when you were kids and if it was like a dream to get into acting for Disney, you know, like.
I mean, yeah. So I grew up doing theater and actually Disney was the first company I worked for professionally, but I actually worked for their theater department. I was in Tarzan on Broadway. I got into acting because of a love of acting, and I kind of ended up finding Disney, which is wonderful. Getting in touch with them in most professional settings is not usually us contacting that company directly. It's through an agent or a manager. And that's just, you know, our agents or managers send us out. We go on auditions and get jobs based on look and talent.
Yeah, there's an interesting, I think, kind of perception of the acting industry and what it's like to get discovered, because there's those very few super lucky celebrities who, you know, they were discovered, whether it's discovered in a mall or they were in a restaurant and some, you know, hotshot Hollywood whatever is like, I want her in my next film. It's like there's those very, very few things, and those are the ones that everybody loves those stories, and so they get blown up in the media. And they
They're huge stories.
Yeah.
Because the regular story is not, the regular story of how people normally go out to Los Angeles and grind, you know, working is not as interesting
and exciting, because 99.9% of people are, you know, they move out to Los Angeles and they're working here for 4 or 5 years. They're a waiter and they're just, you know, getting those small roles. They play like guy number one on Grey's Anatomy, and then they get a couple
They get a single line in.
They're on True Blood two episodes, and then they're slowly building up that resume, continuing to, you know, take classes and everything, and then they're getting larger and larger roles, and that's not as exciting to go on a talk show and talk about.
It's definitely more realistic. It's just, yeah, it's like the fun stories are like Justin Bieber was humming in a grocery store and some guy was like, I want you to be a pop star. And now he's a pop star. It's very, I guess, kind of like classic in the sense for us, but, you know, managers, agents send it out, we go on different jobs, and we got both of us got very fortunate with hooking up with Disney quite early on.
I think the big thing is, you know, finding your place in the entertainment industry. There is definitely, like, you have to find the correct opportunity for yourself. And so those few people have been very lucky to find those opportunities. Kind of, they just stumble onto it, or they find those very early. Most people, it's about putting yourself out there and working really hard to make sure you're, like, chasing every single opportunity. And then eventually one of them's going to be correct for you. So it's a little bit less of, like, you know, getting into acting being like, I'm definitely going to make it on the Disney Channel. You just kind of have to go into it being like, I want to be in the entertainment industry. I want to do, you know, great work, and I want to continue pursuing this, and going on every single audition, not knowing exactly where you're going to end up or what kind of roles you're going to get, because that's just not up to you.
There is also, I've spoken with, you know, random people around the world who say, like, I want to be on Disney Channel. What steps do I need to take? And I always ask, like, do you want to be an actor? Or do you want to be on Disney Channel? Because those are two different things. Yeah. You can act and be on Disney Channel, but if you just want to be on Disney Channel, then I don't necessarily think that you should, like, uproot your life and move out to, you know, to Los Angeles to try and pursue this, because you're almost kind of limiting yourself before you start.
Yeah, that kind of narrow vision is going to be difficult, because, you know, even going into our auditions for Disney Channel, we had already built up resumes of a lot of other companies that we had worked for. So it's like any job interview that you go in on, they like to see that you've worked for a bunch of other people before. You're a really hard worker, you know what's going on. When you show up on set, you can take direction well, and you know all the lingo, and you can work fast and efficiently. So, you know, if you show up and you have no resume because you're just like, I want to work on Disney Channel, they are probably going to hire somebody else who's, you know, done 20 or so national commercials, and they've guest starred on a couple other things, and, you know, they're taking acting seriously, and this is their profession, this is their job.
Yeah. They want prepared people. They want people already kind of knowing the industry. Even if they're kids, they already know how to stay in the stage, you know, like something like that.
Exactly. That being said, Disney does this thing once every couple of years. At one point they were doing it once a year, but I think they've slowed down, but they'll do this kind of worldwide tour where they'll go around and they will set up shop, and they'll have an open call for kids. Kids can just come in, they sing, they dance, they do monologue, and
they do look for talent that's, like, you know, the kids who might not necessarily have the resources to move out to Los Angeles and
definitely,
you know, because you know, they'll ask them all their stories, because, you know, let's say they find some kid in the, you know, the middle of nowhere, like, I don't know, I don't want to say anywhere's middle of nowhere. Let's just say somewhere in Kentucky, right? They find some kid in Kentucky who lives on a farm and didn't have the resources to go out to LA, but has worked hard all of his life,
incredible,
has this natural talent, amazing singer, and they can give him or her a show. and that show becomes really popular.
Now they've got their success story of straight from the farm to big Hollywood, and you know, now they've got their show, and now it's like that whole talk show story.
A lot of drama. I mean, even if it's a nice story, it's a lot of drama anyway. You know,
exactly. So it's especially when people are like, "Oh, I want to work on Disney." It's like I would almost suggest going to those, because
if you've got a good story,
open calls, because you never know.
I
mean, okay, so now it comes to the last part of the show. I have another question for you, a question for both of you guys, and then I have final five questions that are single answer, you know, like yes or no. Or so the question for you, Allison, is like, did you like to act in AP Bio? I just finished the first season last night, and I'm a big fan of comedy, and I like comedies like The Office or Parks and Recreation. AP Bio has the kind of vibe, I would say, like, it's of course different production, but the kind of, like, you know, a little bit of cringy comedy, like a very not politically correct, you know, that kind of like a comedy.
Heather is a really fun, unique character to be able to bring to life, because, you know, she looks all shy and mousy, but as soon as she opens her mouth, it's extremely sexual and strange, and she's trying to get drunk and get in fights, and she's this little like 16-year-old, and you're like, what is going on in her head? So it's a really fun character to portray, and those glasses are insanely difficult to see through, and it kind of creates this whole extra element of, you know, the body language and the acting, the physical acting definitely is a challenge, but all that fumbling around and just kind of open mouth, gawky, whatever, that's definitely a little bit of a choice, but it's also just kind of embracing the fact that I can't even see a foot in front of me. But
yeah, I like the part when you start to cut the pig, like the pork. That was like with so much confidence. Yeah, that's cool.
Thank you.
Don't care about their surrounding, just cut, you know, like.
That episode was so much fun to film. That was directed by Carrie Brownstein, who, you know, I'm a huge Portlandia fan, and so it was amazing getting to work with her, and I think she's such a talented both actor, writer, director, everything, but her directing that episode was so much fun. She gave really fantastic notes to actors. I've found that a lot of different directors will kind of have their, like, thing that they're really good at, you know, whether it's communicating with the camera department and getting incredible shots, or, you know, making sure they move really fast and efficient. But Carrie was very, very talented at giving the actors really good notes and things to work with, and making sure she got options for every line. And so that was really fun working with her. I know that when we filmed that scene in the parking lot where I'm riding Pig on the side of the car, she came up to me and she's like, you know, when like your like sadness is kind of like caught in your throat, and like she would give like really, really specific directions. That was fun to work with as an actor.
Okay, that's great. I mean, I enjoyed the show so far. It's funny. It's the kind of funny, like, with a little bit of bitterness that I kind of like, to be honest. You know, like, so it's a really cool show. And I think also, I guess, acting with an actor like Patton Oswalt would be, like, it's a great experience.
Oh, my God. Both, Glenn Howerton and Patton Oswalt are just comedic geniuses. And I have envied both of them and their careers so much. And getting to work with them is just a dream come true.
Mm-hmm. And for you, Dylan, I remember you acted in a movie that I found pretty interesting. Was Mama Boy.
Yes,
I guess.
Mama Boy.
The theme of the movie is something new. I mean, it's not something that you would bring, I would say, in Disney. Like, it's a little bit, you know, like, it's a tougher theme, you know, like, it's pretty interesting. I was acting in the movie with that kind of idea, because I personally find it very interesting, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it was a very intriguing set. We had a really... fun cast of people. It was really difficult to see where the film was going to go, because on the script you're kind of reading it and you're like, I don't know,
like,
how this is. I don't know what their tone is going to be yet. And when filming, it's like on the first day I kind of say, okay, I know exactly what they're going for. And it was fun, because it's like, it is kind of a serious concept that they're trying to talk about. It's teenage pregnancy. And then they want to kind of turn it on its head a little bit by saying, all right, well, we're going to completely change the situation, and we're going to make the only sane characters the actual guy and girl everybody else is going to be insane, character-y, and wacky. And and that kind of just gave it a really nice, fun tone that could lightheartedly talk about teenage pregnancy without being too intense, too...
Yeah, you guys kind of used the Disney formula, but actually addressed something that was, like, a more serious and kind of touchy topic.
Sure.
Plus, you know, like, the fact that, you know, the boyfriend is... I say that I didn't watch the movie yet, but I was documenting, you know, to try to have better questions and not only, you know, like, watch the footage and ask with Clover. I mean, going a little bit deeper. So, I mean, I haven't watched the movie yet, but I want to watch it because I find it interesting. And I find it interesting the fact that, you know, we talk about teenage pregnancy and move it to a guy, you know, like a guy that wants to help his girlfriend and, you know, like move the fetus to and carry himself. You know, I think it's some kind of taboo topic still nowadays, despite we're in 2020. So, you know, like I find it, and that movie is naturally not from 2020, it's from... It was a first film in 2015, I guess. I mean, still like pretty
recent. It was right after we started dating. Yeah, after we started dating, Dylan booked the film because I remember I swung by your set in Sacramento.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't realize it was that long ago. That's crazy.
It's wild.
So, I mean, like, I don't know why I remember that. I guess memory. Like, it's I sometimes don't remember things that happened 2 minutes ago, but I remember stuff that I read randomly.
Same. I feel you.
Yeah, so I don't know, they call it eidetic memory sometimes, but I'm not a genius, so I think there's something wrong when they gave me that diagnosis, you know. So yeah, I mean, that was amazing, guys. And now I have the five final questions, like straight up answer single. So first question, if you guys have an inspiration, like an actor or a director that is your inspiration, like one each, you know, kind of, or you want to talk about that, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, Glenn Howerton has always been on my radar. I'm a huge It's Always Sunny fan, and so getting to work with him and that whole Heather and Jack relationship that they have, where she, you know, just admires and looks up to him so much, that's not acting.
I've made most camera decisions based on stuff that David Fincher has talked about, so I would have to say David Fincher.
Pretty interesting. I do remember reading about you, Alison, that you also like Jim Carrey. Like, I mean, like, yeah. I'm speaking from Canada, so, you know, like, I live not very far from his hometown, Newmarket, so, I mean.
Oh, like, I know. He's an incredible artist as well. Jim Carrey is huge. He, especially during my, like, heavy comedy days, and, you know, that whole Disney acting, it has to be very physical and very overplayed, and he was always somebody who was taken really seriously in the adult comedy world that kind of did that, almost what Disney wants out of you, of just like really physical, bizarre acting, all the voices and the faces and everything. So he was a fun one as a kid to look up to and be like, okay, don't ever be afraid of looking silly on camera. Like, that's what you have to do to make people laugh. And so it's kind of like stepping out of your shell. I know a lot of kids who they might be going on auditions or they want to be on Disney Channel, they just want to be like pretty, or they want to look cool, and they're afraid to, like, you know, get a pie in the face kind of thing, and they don't want to look silly or get gum stuck in their hair for a joke. It's like, they're like, no, I want to look good. And it's like, well, then you're not going to make anybody laugh. So it's like, you got to be okay with giving it 110%.
Yes. Okay, second question. If you guys have to choose comic book, movie, or TV show?
Ooh, comic book, movie, or TV show?
Yeah.
I mean, it really depends on the piece. I think that there's so many talented people working on each one of those things that it's really just who's bringing the story to life. I think there's lots of different ways that you could tell a story.
I think just all in all, just picking one, just for the sake of picking one, I'm just going to say movie.
Yeah, we're huge movie fans. I mean, you can see behind us, we have the carpet pattern of The Shining, and there's Fight Club pillow right behind him. We're big, big movie fans, and I've always found that movies is like my favorite escape. Yeah. So
I understand you. Before COVID, I used to go to the movies probably once a week at least. I love going to the movie theater and watching
movies. Yeah, we had AMC Movie Pass, so we would go 3 times a week.
Nice.
Yeah, it was
like three free movies a week, and they assume that you're not going to go see 3 movies a week. And
that's where
totally
you're wrong, AMC.
Completely. I thought my friends sometimes thought I was insane, but I just love to go to either by myself or with my friends or with my girlfriend. You know, like it's something that I like to do, to be honest. And people think I'm insane if I go too much, but I just love movies. So, you know.
With the Joker 3 times in theaters?
Yes.
Yep.
Nice. And so if I have to ask you your favorite movie?
Fight Club. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Nice.
We have four posters of it?
The back of my phone case is a painting of Tyler Durden that Dylan painted.
I mean, it's a great movie. It's a great movie.
Fight Club is one of the...
And you painted that?
Yeah, it's a full canvas
that was shrunk down and printed on the case. But yeah, that's a painting that I made.
You guys are such talented artists, you know, like honestly, like crazy. I didn't know you were painting too. So I mean, like
that was the second painting that he had ever made. So the first painting, I'm sure you can find it somewhere on my social media. He painted Marla from Fight Club for me, mm-hmm. because Fight Club has always been also kind of like a staple for us. It was something where right before we started dating, we went to go see Fight Club together as friends, and we had both gotten out of really difficult, unhealthy relationships, and those people were kind of attached to our friend groups and just sort of our whole like lifestyles, everything. Mm-hmm. So it kind of felt like we had just sort of like lost everything and, you know, spent a lot of time on something that just like didn't, you know, turn into anything. And so we were hanging out as friends, and, you know, Fight Club is all about like hitting rock bottom and being able to build yourself back up from there. And there's the quote, it's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. And it kind of just really spoke to us in that moment of, you know, we had both seen Fight Club before and absolutely love it because it's fantastic performances, the shots, everything that David Fincher does is incredible. And it's just such a fun, funny film. A lot of people hear Fight Club and they think like, oh, violence, I don't want to just watch people fight, which obviously there are those scenes, but it's much more of a comedy. There's so many layers to that movie.
It's very introspective movie. Now that you said that, I can see where you guys get, I don't know if that's an English word, that kind of introspectiveness in your work, to be honest. I don't know if I might be wrong. I mean, like, I'm just saying that I can, now that you said Fight Club, and Fight Club is such a psychological movie more than just fights in a clandestine environment, you know.
Like, yeah, there's so many layers to it. Yeah, psychological thrillers and psychological films are all my favorite. Yeah. But yeah, Fight Club was definitely one where listening to that, it's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything quote, just really kind of spoke to both of us in that moment, and it's really stuck with us.
And David Fincher was the director. And in the DVD commentary, he talks about how underexposed the film is. And
Dylan,
because of that, I started
really dark.
darkening everything on camera to where it's underexposed.
Yeah,
and
our
that's
editor's
why
like, it's pretty dark. And Dylan's like, I like it.
It's perfect. I love
like
it.
It's like Fincher's work.
I think it's the right, you know, like lighting, I would say, because it's a dark movie. Speaks about dark topic and you are in a dark place of the character is in a dark place in his mind. So, you know, like, I think it's the right environment, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Personally, I think that working with shadow is so interesting.
Even in painting as well. That's what Dylan does for a lot of his paintings. And which, yeah, speaking of, because we started talking about the Marla painting. So Dylan wanted for our first Christmas together to buy me a Marla painting, but it wasn't going to ship in time for Christmas. And so Dylan was like, I'll just paint it myself. Sits down in like two nights and masterfully paints this thing. And I remember him giving it to me and me seeing his signature at the bottom of the canvas and being like, wait, art's my thing. What do you do? What? How did you? Like, I didn't know you could paint. He's like, I didn't know I could either.
That's pretty great, to be honest.
There's a bunch of gifts that I've given her, because I gave her two paintings. Yeah, one of them was Tyler, one of them was Marla. And I remember there was one thing I was like, I want to carve a wooden block. I was like, I want to carve the Fight Club soap out of wood. So I
wow, that looks perfect, to be honest.
That's the one that I started this. I was like, all right, I'm definitely not a carver.
You're really talented, man. Like, honestly, like I know you're an artist in the sense of actor and director, but I didn't know you were actually an hands-on artist, you know, like painting and carving, you know, like amazing.
He's randomly good at everything he tries. He can play every instrument under the sun.
I think there's a certain amount of like when you, it's hard to say because I'm very technical when it comes to creativity. It's like I don't look at things about like, ooh, what all can I toss together? I look at things that like, how can I make something happen?
You have a very specific end goal in mind with everything. The way that I draw and paint is a little bit more just kind of like, let me just see where this goes. Whereas you're very much like, this is what I want to make, and I'm going to, you know, look up the exact way that other people make these things.
Which is why I think that I like kind of working with cameras. I think that that kind of helps because I can look at a shot and say, I know what I can do with this camera. Mm-hmm. I know how to achieve the shot that I'm going for. So I'll put the settings that I want on and make the shot look right. Yeah. And I think that that works out in my favor for other hobbies like woodworking or music or painting, is that it's very much like I know what I want to go for and I can fiddle with it until I get there.
He's very mm-hmm. left brain.
Okay, that's interesting. I think I lost the count. I think I were a third question. I think now it's because we Fight Club is such an amazing movie that we needed to talk about that. I mean, like, of course, yeah. But yeah, I mean, like fourth question is like if you guys like sports and if you have a favorite sport. I don't know if you guys are sporty
people. I've grown up with, my dad's a big fan of baseball, so that's always been kind of something nostalgic that makes me, you know, enjoy my time with him of, you know, our whole family going out to see a baseball game. But if it comes to sports that I actually enjoy playing and that I'm good at, because I have terrible, like, hand-eye coordination, so anything with a ball just, like, doesn't compute with my brain. But I do a lot of things, like I played roller derby as a teenager, and so that was something that was kind of, you know, violent and aggressive in a good way for a teenager to kind of get out all that angst and, you know, wear mm-hmm. fishnets and heavy eyeliner, and so roller derby was my thing.
I grew up in Alabama, college football town, so I watched a lot of Alabama football, but other than that, I'm not really a huge sports guy. Just never.
Both of us kind of do the stuff that, like, you do on your own as opposed to with a team. So roller derby was really the only, like, team sport that I played. Both of us are, you know, rock climbing and swimming and kind of the things where it's, like, athletic and you enjoy it, but it's not as much of, like, a competitive team mm-hmm. environment.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of, like, the sports that I do are the ones that are kind of fringe sports. It's, like, barely in the Olympics. Like, ping pong. I love ping pong, mm-hmm. but, like, why is that in the Olympics? It's
like frisbee golf and things like that.
Yeah, it's ultimate frisbee is a little more of a sport, at least, I guess. Not Olympics, but yeah, and like billiards, like I really like the pool.
Mm-hmm. We have billiards at our wedding reception.
Growing up in Italy, I grew up, you know, like with the little soccer table, you know, the one that like
we have one right there.
Yeah. That's my favorite, you know, like, but. Yeah, I mean, the last question would be, because this podcast is about hobbies, what's your favorite hobby in absolute, if you can say?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I've always based my life around doing what I love. And so my hobbies have been what I've turned into my career. So writing and filmmaking and art are my absolute passions and they are my hobbies, but they're also my job.
Yeah, I mean, I think my video games, and I've recently gotten back into Twitch streaming, mm-hmm. which has been wonderful. It's nice because I'm not the most active on social media, and mm-hmm. so Twitch is a way that I can just kind of, anybody who wants to reach out to me, I can just say, hey, I don't really go on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram that much, so literally just go to my Twitch and talk to me there. Like, yeah, I would be really on 4 days a week.
Good with, okay. You know, games and talking to
people. And that's been really nice. Yeah. But it also, you know, lets me kind of talk to people, and also I can play games. I can mm-hmm. mess
yeah,
around.
It was so cute. On last Friday, it was one of Dylan's big fans. It was her birthday, and so Dylan hopped on Discord with her, and they played Minecraft on his stream.
Oh,
so,
very nice. Great, to be honest.
She wanted to play Minecraft, and so it was like her little birthday stream. And
I have to start. Twitch. Like I never. I mean, not streaming. I wouldn't be able. But I mean, like I don't have enough video game experience to stream on Twitch video gaming. But like I have to start follow more Twitch because there's a lot of interesting things, and I like video gaming too. So you know, like I gotta start following you about on that. You know, I love video gaming too. I haven't been. Video gaming much lately, but I used to love it, to be honest. I'm a big Nintendo fan.
You know, I just remember growing up, video games was like something that all the kids did, but it wasn't it wasn't the thing to do. There was no, at the time, there was no esports, which is now a very big category. And you can make money off of playing video games now. But for a long time, it was kind of an area to waste your life. And so it was like, as a child, I just kind of openly accepted, well, I'm wasting these years then because I'm just going to play games. It's turned into a legitimate career, and I find that more people now play video games than, you know, 15 years ago.
The stigma around it has definitely changed.
Everybody is picking up video games, and I think that's really wonderful because it's kind of legitimizing it a little more as a source of entertainment. Not only that, but certain games are more difficult to play on your hardware based on whatever you have, PC, Mac, console, and so it's also allowing people to watch gaming, and that is becoming a viable source of entertainment as well.
It's so weird that gaming has always been kind of considered like a waste of time, whereas like watching television and movies is like, oh, that's entertainment. It's like, so is
video gaming. Games, yeah.
what are you talking about?
Anyway, guys, thank you very much for being here. There would be so many other things I'd like to talk about. We're getting too long. You guys are great. Thank you very much for being here. I wanted to mention that, you know, you guys also do a lot of charity. I was reading you do a lot of charity work, or you did anyway, like Dylan. It was amazing. I was reading the one about bullies and bullying, you know, like it was amazing. So I just wanted to mention that. So you guys are great, great artists, and you also care about the community, which is great, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, both Dylan and I were lucky enough to have plenty of, you know, charities that will reach out to us and contact us and give us really great opportunities and ways to connect with, you know, the community and raise money. And that's always been really helpful because it can sometimes be a little bit intimidating of, you know, you want to help and you want to do something, but you don't exactly know where to start. And I always, you know, try to do my little donations or, you know, percentage of my artwork going somewhere. But it's really nice when, you know, a charity comes out and they want to team up and they're like, hey, can you record a video for these kids and just give them a positive message? It's like, great. Yes, that's 100% something I can do and embrace, and then I get to help. And
yeah, they've been on pause for a little bit, but I was with this charity for a while called Lollipop Theater Company, and they were wonderful. They would have random actors, I was one of them, some musicians come out to the children's hospitals, and we would just kind of meet with the kids and do like a little music day, or we would go and like create a song with them, or we'd make a little short film with them, or just, you know, kind of hang out and talk with them. Some of them, you know, we would go out and paint pictures with them, play video games, whatever it was, but it was just like hanging out with them, which was really nice.
Yeah, I spoke at a charity event in Maryland one time several years ago, back when I was on the Disney Channel, and it was for a group called Kids Are Heroes, where it kind of honored different kids in their community who had gone out and done something, whether it was a beach cleanup or, you know, a lemonade stand that raised money for something. And so I remember speaking at that event. It was so wonderful, not only meeting these kids who had done so much for their communities, but just I remember writing that speech with my father, and there's still so many things from that speech. Of it was something motivational to tell the kids, but I still pull from that in my daily life of just like those were good words to say, and that really does pump me up.
and my first piece of art I bought from you, the Drifter, I bought it because I was in a time where I was struggling with money, and I wanted both to buy a piece of art and also help, you know, a cause like the Okra Project. And you were, I wanted really to buy it. So really, it really helps the Okra Project. And it was an amazing, you know, like a charity work. So I said, yeah, that's amazing. So it's great, to be honest.
Thank you.
And this was episode 11 of The Corner, L'Angolo di Gabe. Who doesn't speak Italian, L'Angolo di Gabe means the corner of Gabe, who is me. Thank you very much, guys, for being here. It was amazing. I kept you probably a bit too long, but there's so many things we could talk about. And good luck, and thank you. And I hope the fires in California are going to stop soon, because it's a difficult situation. And I really, really, really feel about that. You know, environment is another big thing. So take care, and thank you very much, and see you guys next episode.
Thank you so much for having us. It was really nice.
Thank you. Bye, guys. Thank you.